and welcome to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm your host, Adam A. Donaldson. Joining me a bit later today will be Peter Salmon. Peter, of course, is still a student, at least for a little while longer, and he presently is done his exams, which, you know, is another reminder, just, you know, to how quickly time is flying, especially when we're still locked down like this. You know, intellectually, I knew it was April. I did not appreciate everything that April entails, because usually when we're recording these things on campus and you get to April, there's, you know, significantly more activity because people are in that time, or maybe there's a bit more flexibility because they're preparing for exams, or they're just finished exams, people are packing up to go home. There's a little bit of more buzz in the air on campus. Of course, I am kilometers away from campus at Guelph Politico headquarters on Snake Mountain, so I have no idea what's happening right now on campus. I hear things, though, so hopefully we'll get back there soon. End Credits is a local movie show for local movie fans. We are here every Wednesday at 3 p.m. to talk the latest in pop culture and review the newest movies, which this week will be the new documentary, Jasper Mall, which you can now stream on Amazon Prime. Now, sadly, Jasper Mall is not nominated for Best Feature Documentary. I'm not sure it was even in contention. Perhaps it should have been. And perhaps if you want to go and check it out on Amazon Prime after you hear our review and judge for yourself, perhaps you will think, yes, this is an Oscar-worthy documentary. I bring this up because the Oscars are this coming Sunday. And when we are doing, like, the usual in-person show, we you know, whatever panelist is joining me this the week before the Oscars, we do a little prediction, a little Oscar predictions, and it's usually who we think will win and who we think should win. Since I've been doing these, you know, up-top segments by myself, I'm going to have to play that game by myself, as it were. So you're going to have to listen to me playing with myself, as it were. I hope somebody's monocle just fell in their martini glass. Anyway, so we're going to talk about the top categories at the Oscars this year and talk about who's likely to win and maybe who should win. I think in a couple of cases, we're definitely going to see a lot of crossover between who should and who will win, and that's to be expected. But we'll have to see how this all shakes out as I go down the list. So, nominated for Best Picture are The Father, Judas and the Black Messiah, Mank, Minari, Nomadland, Promising Young Woman, Sound of Metal, and The Trial of the Chicago 7. I'm also going to do Best Director at the same time, because I think it's going to go the same way. So, nominated for Best Director are Thomas Vinterberg for Another Round, David Fincher for Mank, Lee Isaac Chung for Minari, Chloe Zhao for Nomadland, and Emerald Fennell for Promising Young Woman. I think it's safe to say, because this is how all the awards have been really shaking out, is that it's going to be Nomadland for Best Picture and Chloe Zhao for Best Director. I think I have not seen Minari, so I'm not 100% sure, but just going by buzz and sort of these other outside measurements, I think it's safe to say that, you know, Nomadland, having cleaned up several awards, including the Golden Globes and the BAFTAs, I think it's pretty solidly Chloe Zhao's to lose, which again will be highly historic as the first woman of color and only the second woman ever to win an Oscar. I think also the second person of color to win an Oscar and the second person of Asian descent to win an Oscar because of Parasite last year and Bong Joon-ho. So, I mean, it would be historic and in great number of ways. Of course, this is already historic with Lee Isaac Chung also nominated and Emerald Fennell also nominated. So this is a year where we've had two people of Asian descent nominated for Best Director and two women nominated for Best Director, which automatically doubles the number of women who have been nominated for Best Director in the entire history of the Oscars, which is just extraordinary in 2021. So I think anyone that's seen Nomadland, and we reviewed that last week, I think it's I think it's pretty clear that that is the one that's that stands out above all others. That brings us to Best Actor. So the nominees are Riz Ahmed for Sound of Metal, Chadwick Boseman for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, Anthony Hopkins for The Father, Gary Oldman for Mank, and Steven Yeun as for Minari. Minari is not the name of a person from the film so much as so far as I know. This has kind of also been a sort of a locked up category. Chadwick Boseman has been winning all the honors posthumously, of course, since he sadly passed away last fall. I think we're in kind of a weird situation here. We'll get that to Best Supporting Actor category. Not to say that Chadwick Boseman isn't great in Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. I think I would have loved to have seen him also get a nomination for Best Supporting Actor in The Five Bloods. Because I also would have liked to have seen Delroy Lindo get a nomination at all for The Five Bloods, but that was not meant to be. I think he could have easily taken Gary Oldman's spot. Since literally no one is talking about Mank, it seems to have been abandoned even by its own distributor, Netflix, who's sort of concentrated all their Oscar campaigning efforts into The Trial of the Chicago 7, which I think is a mistake, because if we're going for, like, real straight-up artistic integrity and commitment, I think Mank is a better movie than The Trial of the Chicago 7, which Aaron Sorkin could have written and directed in his sleep. But I digress. So I think Chadwick Boseman, very deserved, and I think he will almost definitely win as Best Actor posthumously. It will be a capstone to a career cut far too short, and I think that's an honor that the Academy is definitely going to want to go with. For Best Actress, the nominees are Viola Davis for Ma Rainey's Black Bottom, Andra Day for The United States versus Billie Holiday, Vanessa Kirby for Pieces of a Woman, Frances McDormand for Nomadland, and Carey Mulligan for Promising Young Woman. This is going to be an interesting category to watch because Andra Day won the Golden Globe. Frances McDormand won the BAFTA, and Viola Davis won the Screen Actors Guild. So, the awards sort of leading up to this have been fairly easily split, which is fascinating. I think, though, the Academy, and I think she would be my choice too, I think the Academy is going to lead Andra Day's way because this was, like, her first big movie. It's, like, her third film role ever. And for her to come in and just, like, own so capably, I remember when we reviewed the United States versus Billie Holiday, there was some mixed feelings about the narrative structure of the film and other things, but there is no doubt Andra Day owns in that movie from beginning to end. She is phenomenal. She has such presence. There's such pathos in the performance. She is really, really quite good. I mean, Vanessa Kirby, like, she'll be back one day. Viola Davis, this is her fifth nomination. She will most definitely be back. Frances McDormand has two Oscars already. And, I mean, Carey Mulligan has been nominated before. I think she will be nominated again. But I also think that, I may be wrong, but I don't think Carey Mulligan is the reason why people are talking about Promising Young Woman. That's not to say that she doesn't have a good performance in the film, but I think that the film is sort of bigger than her, which I cannot say the same about The United States versus Billie Holiday, where Andra Day is that movie. So Best Supporting Actor. The nominees are Sacha Baron Cohen for The Trial of the Chicago 7, Daniel Kaluuya for Judas and the Black Messiah, Leslie Odom Jr. for One Night in Miami, Paul Racy for The Sound of Metal, and Lakeith Stanfield for Judas and the Black Messiah. Again, this is it's something very weird in this category. It feels like they got Kaluuya and Stanfield out of the way, because one of them should be Best Actor and the other one should be Best Supporting Actor. They shouldn't both be Best Supporting Actor, but I think the Academy got them both out of the way so that they could give Chadwick Boseman the Oscar with some assurity. Having said that, I am wondering if they will cancel each other out in the voting, and I think that will elevate Leslie Odom Jr., who has a Grammy for Hamilton. He also has a Tony for Hamilton. If he gets the Oscar for Best Supporting Actor, that will put him That will get him the GOT and EGOT. All he will need is an Emmy. And I think that is an interesting proposition for him. I think that's going to be attractive in sort in voting for him to be Best Supporting Actor. And also, that's not to say either that he wasn't phenomenal as Sam Cooke in One Night in Miami, because he was. Part of me would really love to see Paul Racy win, because I don't know. I don't think he will get nominated for another Oscar. And he is so good in The Sound of Metal. He makes it look so easy, but he is, he's just so perfect in that role. And he's just, I can't say enough about Paul Racy in Sound of Metal. It is my sincere hope that he maybe gets another chance one of these days to win an Oscar, or perhaps he's an upset. I mean, I understand at the end of the day, it would look fairly bad if three black men lose to one of the two white guys for Best Supporting Actor. So there are obviously political implications there as well that would probably result in Paul Racy not winning. Also, Sound of Metal has not been... it's sort of faded as the Oscar race has rolled on. But, I mean, I'll certainly remember Paul Racy's performance. Best Supporting Actress, Maria Bakalova for Borat 2, Glenn Close for Hillbilly Elegy, Olivia Colman for The Father, Amanda Seyfried for Mank, and Yoon Young-jun for Minari. Yoon Young-jun has been cleaning up in the other award season picks lately. She won the SAG award. She also won the BAFTA, and she did not win the Golden Globe. She wasn't even nominated. It went to Jodie Foster for The Manchurian, The Mauritanian. Jodie Foster was not even nominated for an Oscar. So my assumption is that Yoon Young-jun is going to win. My own personal preference, I think, would be for Maria Bakalova, because I don't... If she wasn't so gung-ho and able to, you know, match Sacha Baron Cohen for just, like, sheer daring and... Don't give an F-ness, if that's an actual thing. That movie doesn't work. It works because of her. And it's just like another... It's like Andra Day. It's like this outstanding, you know, first-time performance. That's just completely balls to the wall. And, I mean, she was correctly rewarded with an Oscar nomination. But I think she also deserves the statue itself. Okay. Best Original Screenplay, we have got Judas and the Black Messiah, Minari, Promising Young Woman, Sound of Metal, Trial of the Chicago 7. I'm worried that this is going to become the Aaron Sorkin Memorial Award anytime that guy has something that is turned into a movie, has a script turned into a movie, he is given a slot. I don't think that is correct for Trial of the Chicago 7, which, again, he could have written in his sleep, and I am not entirely convinced that he did not. Judas and the Black Messiah is a compelling story in its own right, and very well told. Part of that, though, was the filmmaking, Sound of Metal as well. My suspicion is that Emerald Fennell should and will win this. That is a complex screenplay that makes some really bold choices that were never going to sit well with everyone. And the fact that it executed on those choices should be rewarded. I think if there is a award that Best Original Screen... Promising Young Woman is most likely to get, it will be Best Original Screenplay. So, Best Adapted Screenplay. The nominees are Borat 2, The Father, Nomadland, One Night in Miami, and The White Tiger. I think that, Nomadland could be, it is a contender. I think it is a strong contender. But I think if Chloe Zhao is going to get an award beyond the two I've already mentioned, I think it might be for editing. She is also nominated as an editor of Nomadland, and I'm just going to check to... Yes, she is the sole editor on Nomadland. So that is very compelling, that she would have that three, that hat trick, and I think that is probably likely how this is going to play out. I think they will not give her best adapted screenplay, but they will give her best editor, and I think in that vacuum, the one to beat is One Night in Miami by Kemp Powers. Again, that will be the one nod to that movie, which I think probably should have deserved one of the best director slots, probably Fincher's slot for Regina King. But again, that was not meant to be. And instead went to Fincher. But having said all that, One Night in Miami... should be rewarded in some way, I think, and Kemp Powers is a pretty good way to reward it. Maybe this will be the last one. It's Best Animated Feature, and the nominees are Onward, Over the Moon, a Shaun the Sheep Movie, Farmageddon, Soul, and Wolfwalkers. At the Annie Awards, which is the awards for animated works, I think it was last weekend, Soul won Best Picture, Wolfwalkers won Best Independent Feature. Can't really split that atom at the Oscars. So I mean, this should more or less be called the Pixar Award at times, so I think Soul will probably take it. Look for Wolfwalkers as a soft upset, a strong potential upset, it just if the Academy is in a mood to... I mean, because there are also... there's another Pixar movie, Onward. But if the Academy is in a mood to shake things up, Wolfwalkers would be a strong case to give that a whirl. Anyway, that's all the time we have for Oscar nominations. It's going to be a very busy weekend for movie awards stuff. The Independent Spirit Awards are on Thursday, tomorrow, so that is worth checking out. It will be the only award show you see this year where First Cow is correctly nominated for several awards, including Best Feature and Best Director for Kelly Reichardt. Sadly, you will not see First Cow at an award show anywhere else. That's worth paying attention to, the Independent Spirit Awards for that. On Saturday, we get the Golden Raspberries, which is the nominations for the worst film of the year. And then on Sunday, we've got the Oscar telecast. So enjoy a very busy movie awards week. For now, we will tune up our trip to the mall with a little mall music. You are listening to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio.
Housekeeping, maintenance, security.
We usually get about 30 walkers in the mornings, all different times.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America.
Now this is where the OK Mart used to be.
Look, there's still got the phone here.
Last week, somebody decided they didn't want to use the bathroom. They just decided to poop on the floor.
Really?
Yeah, I'm just being straightforward.
That's crazy.
I know.
And that was a clip from Jasper Mall. It is the new film from Bradford Tomaso and Brett Whitcomb, and it stars the workers, vendors, and shoppers of the Jasper Mall in Walker, Alabama. I am now being joined on the line by Peter Salmon. Peter, how are you today?
Doing good. Just living life, dealing with all these quarantine changes. Done school, though. I know exams are still on, so anybody listening who's doing exams, I hope it's good. Great. Yeah.
Way to cover yourself.
Yeah, geez. Good. Just saying good. Rude.
Yes. So, stricter quarantine means, no trips to the movie theater, and also no trips to the mall. And, it's interesting to talk about, this subject, especially here in Guelph, because I think it's safe to say that, Stone Road Mall is, far from dead, quite the opposite.
Yeah. It's booming.
Yeah. So, we are reviewing Jasper Mall, and Peter, you pulled this out of your hat.
Yeah.
To review, so, tell us why you wanted to go to Alabama and the Jasper Mall.
I was feeling those Doc vibes, but, one of the main things, I follow Andy Milonakis on Twitter, and he made a post how he just saw a film Jasper Mall, and it was like if Harmony Korine directed, documentaries. So I checked it out. No, that was the main reason, Andy Milonakis' tweet. But I also pay for Prime, right? I'm not gonna waste that. I'm gonna pump out these Prime shows and docs. Also, I love malls, and I love slacker, laid back stuff. You know, when you're retired and walking around, I don't know. There's something about it. Mallrats is one of my favorite films, so it's there's just something about malls. I don't know. I love them. I absolutely love them. I'd say the hardest part about quarantine for me has been for me personally has been the malls. I do love them. Overall, obviously, like death, that's the bad stuff. But I do miss those malls. But it was, you know, I am in Guelph. I'm used to Stone Road Mall, so I thought it was interesting to watch one about pure emptiness. It had me thinking about the Willow Road Mall. It was very reflective off that.
Yeah, no, I remember Willow West Mall when it was a mall. I mean, I guess they still technically call it Willow West Mall, even though it's more of a plaza now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's interesting, this phenomenon of dead malls, because I do follow the Dead Malls subreddit where people post pictures of dead and dying malls. It's a bit of a fascination, and there are places around here where there are signs of malls dying. I think Shoppers World in Brampton is in the middle of a revitalization effort where they're transforming a section of that mall, and I remember.
The one right across from the convention center, like where Fan Expo is, it's pretty dead in Toronto. The one that has a McDonald's for whatever reason. I thought that was weird. It's dying.
Yeah.
It's dying for sure.
Is that the underground though? Is that
the underground one.
Yeah. It's just
Street Mall or whatever it's called, or Square One. No, that's the Mississauga one. Either way, a lot of the GTA ones are still bumping. They're doing really great. About which one?
The Atrium on Bay? Yeah,
the Atrium.
Yeah. Again, it's been well over a year since I've been to any of these places. So,
hey, Yorkdale. Yorkdale's good too still.
Yeah. I mean, Yorkdale is also has the I think it can open on
That's the one thing about this doc. I learned some terms and such for the mall. I just thought it was, they were all called stores, but there's anchors too, right? So the big ones that are kind of have their own entrance. So like Kmart and in Canada, Sears and stuff. Well, right, what used to be Sears, I guess. Atmosphere. What is it called? The Mountain Place, the Stone Road Mountain Place.
Stone Road Mountain Place. Yeah. Isn't it called Alpine?
Yeah, there you go. Alpine? Yeah. I don't know, but that's something like that. But yeah, I thought that was really cool.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. And I found it in this film, I found it really fun. Mike McClelland, he kept mentioning how there's some possibilities, right? You know, with JC coming back, or maybe a Walmart even. Oh, a Nordstrom. I was being a little optimistic, but you know. I thought it was fun.
Yeah, it's Mike McClelland is his name. And he's kind of if there is a central character in the film, he is the central character. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I found his sort of boundless optimism fun because he's it's also kind of sad in respect too. And it shows like kind of like the real everyday struggles of this. But, you know, his talking about, you know, they can bring in, you know, there's. I'm not sure it's him talking about like things like Victoria's Secret moving on, which I think is another thing that has closed up. I don't think there are any more Victoria's Secrets locations anymore. Yeah. But you know, it's other tenants in the mall who are, you know, struggling to get by and are hopeful that there might be a revitalization ahead, or they have loyalty to the mall or the other shops there. But I mean, some of them decide to bail on.
Yeah. Move downtown.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. In terms of like, just like the everyday business struggles, you know, and again, we see a lot of that through Mike, who, you know, he says he's like maintenance and security, but I think he also does a lot of management of the actual mall itself. Like
he does. Yeah.
He's a jack of all trades. Yeah.
Yeah. It's owned by like a big company and they just have him kind of deal with it all.
Yeah.
The one thing I don't understand how he's like, is he the only one cleaning? Like at the end of the film, it's just him cleaning. It's like, that's a big mall, man. It's a big mall. That was one of the examples of that one. I thought there was a lot of really great cinematography in this. Mm-hmm. At first, I thought it was maybe a bit too reflective off of kind of the intentionally good looking cinematography, like Wild Wild West kind of thing, you know, or those, what are they, the brothers that made like Stranger Things and stuff. There's a lot of great shots.
There's no reason
for the shots to be so great. But this one, I think that very last cinematography, a shot at the end kind of shows that no, there's an intention for this great cinematography. It's not just trying to make itself look good. It is good. It's doing it for an intention, right? Like that last shot, it was supposed to be the first one to really show what this guy's doing. He's cleaning, right? And it shows kind of a clip shift from him at the one table to way far back. It just shows that how much this guy has to do, you know?
I think there's a certain style to that. Like the way the directors, I think the directors show a lot of, I don't know, restraint, but they are very focused on what sort of goes on inside the walls of the mall.
Which I kind of like.
Oh, I liked it too. What I noticed is that once kind of a tenant leaves the mall, they're gone. They're gone from the story. Like there's no follow up later. Yeah. And there's one scene where it's like the barber shop in the mall. I think it's called Master Cut. But you spend some time with two of the stylists near the beginning, and then it's like right like somewhere near the end there's like a bunch of like establishing shots of different points in the mall, and one of them is the front of Mastercut, which has closed, and there's kind of, and I realized that the directors weren't there every single day, but
no, and it was like a span of over a year too, so yeah.
But you never find out like what happened to Mastercut, what happened to those women, they're just gone.
Yeah. No, I know. Maybe, yeah, the documentarians maybe should have stuck around for more of a long basis, but we got a good amount of. I was very glad we got to see the one individual who was retiring and moving away.
Oh, Robinson.
And I loved the scene where the one like senior keeps like walking back to her and trying to convince her to stay, but no, she won't do it. She made her feel really guilty. I don't think that was needed, but that was a fun shot. And then that senior at the end says, "You know what? You can just cut this. You can just cut this." But they didn't cut it.
No, she's she says something about it, like being in the malls and big whoop whoop, and she's like, "Oh no, cut that out. That's a bad word." But I mean, it's fun to sort of see all these various characters. You know, not just the people who run the stores in the mall, but you know, it keeps cutting back to these gentlemen who get together and play dominoes in the mall. Yeah. And, you know, in so much as malls were sort of embraces like crassly commercial and I guess the ultimate expression of 80s consumerism, they are still like in effect like community centers in their own right. And
oh, and it showed that, and that needs to be shown. Absolutely.
Yeah. It's just funny to me. There's one part where Mike's talking, he's like patching the roof or something. He's like, you know, we just got to do something to help the mall. And, you know, they're trying all these things like carnivals and, you know, he's talking about how what's the name of the town? Walker.
Walker. City. I think it's a city.
Well, this all right.
Rude comment. I can check.
I apologize to the people of Walker, but if anyone should be happening to listen in from Walker, it's possible CFRU is online. But it is fascinating to hear him say, you know, the city council of Walker is trying to redevelop the downtown core and attract more people down there and more business. And it's like, that is so weird because that's not a uniquely Walker thing. Or a uniquely American thing. There are a lot of cities in North America that are trying to revitalize the cores and trying to get away from, you know, these sort of segregated, you know, commercial areas, segregated residential areas, trying to create like more livable communities again. But it's funny how it's kind of turned in 20 years. Like the mall used to be where it was at. And now we're abandoning the malls and going back to the downtowns. And while it was kind of understandable 20, 30 years ago, abandoning the downtowns, because that's a lot of history down there, like in some cases, hundreds of years of history. Now it's the reverse. We're moving back into the downtowns and people are lamenting the stuff.
Yeah. About the mall. Hey, I'm on that side, man. I'm on that side. I know there's a lot of independent stores downtown, but I'm just basing this off of Guelph. A lot of the independent ones are like the people are rich. That's why they were able to make the independent store open or whatever. And just I don't know. The downtown Guelph, there's going to be a lot of real. I like ritzy restaurants. There's going to be a bit too much. I don't know. Well, I feel like some of downtown Guelph, and I feel like this does happen in the downtowns when it becomes more of the focus. It's. Mm. Just gentrification, right?
Right. I mean, that plays a part of it, and this is not a film that's very interested in the socio-political economic dynamics, and that's fine. It's
no.
Really,
this was a mall film. This was about Jasper Mall.
Right. Yeah.
That's
it.
And you can use that basis for any of the other mall issues going on.
And to get back to what you're saying in the beginning about, you know, malls are films that sort of revolve around the mall. That is something that I was thinking a lot about. You know, I was thinking about Fast Times. I was thinking about Mall Rats and you know, these films.
Well,
that
I always think of the finale of Superbad. I like how the most important kind of final scene is in a mall as well. That's, you know, that's where I always bump into people.
Right. That's, you know, it's the great, It's not a breakup scene between Michael Cera and Jonah Hill, but it is a kind of essentially where they go different ways with their own girlfriends.
Well, the big teen stuff happens in the malls. And it is where, a lot of like first dates are and everything like that. I also like, for my generation, we had the show 16 too, fully set in a mall. It's just, malls have always, they're always with us. But the downtown gentrification is destroying that. And Jasper Mall, Jasper Mall's focus isn't on that, but it shows what we're losing. You know, it shows what the individuals in the malls are dealing with.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is interesting because I was able to use the internet to do some follow up, and apparently, the Jasper Mall is coming back to life in some way because somebody moved into the Kmart and turned the Kmart, the old Kmart, into what's basically a community center.
That's
where there's
cool.
Like lunch programs and there's like religious services in one part of it and all kinds of interesting things. So I mean, and that also plays, the film deals with none of this because this was a fairly recent event, I think last year. But you know, there is, if you're at all feeling wistful at the end of Jasper Ball, know that it is still there and there is still hope for all the the good people in that that love the Jasper Mall.
Mm-hmm. And just going back, like you said, I think the Domino's guys, that was a lot of fun. And they have to. I enjoyed how they have to do with the finale. You know, not in a good way. Well, or maybe in a good. I don't know. I don't want to ruin it for the viewers, but they're a huge part of the film. I like that.
That was the biggest mic drop I have ever seen.
Yeah, I know.
It's like, oh yeah, did you hear one of my Domino's players died? Oh yeah. My goodness, it's. I was like,
and
wait,
he walks right off the camera. The camera shot.
He's still talking about it.
Yeah,
and it's sad. And I think it's the gentleman who at the beginning he's on the phone and he's talking about how he went to the hospital and he almost died, but it was okay because he'd like died three times before and got back. And so, I mean, that I wrote that down in my notes, just because I thought it was an interesting anecdote and made him an interesting character, but he says something to the effect of like, you know, the next time I die, it better be it.
And it was. He succeeded. Was. He wins. It's also the way I view the recent royalty death, right? Prince Philip. He for years had said he doesn't want to make it to 100, right? And it's just like a month before 100, he didn't make it, and I'm proud of him in that sense, you know. So I guess how I kind of viewed it in Jasper Mall too. That was fun.
Well, it's also fun to note. Well, not fun, but it's interesting to note. Prince Philip also said he didn't want his death to be a big deal, but of course, because he's the Queen's consort, they kind of have to make it a big deal. But because of COVID,
it was pretty chill.
It was pretty yeah, exactly. So he got what he wanted in that regard too. So
which is good.
Everyone got the deaths they wanted, and that's a great message for this episode of the show.
When in Jasper Mall, we've been talking about, you know, the mall and McClelland. The small amount of looks we get to that we like receive of the customers is great. It's fun. The especially the boyfriend girlfriends. They're dealing with like intersectionality and race. It was really well done. She was funny. She was funny too. And he was just, you know, he was just going with it. He was just riding the wave. He liked her. So yeah. And I really enjoyed when they're just out in the parking lot and they sit in the car and they just give a talk about, you know, like racism and everything like that. And I think it's so disgusting that the one, the girlfriend, she mentions how her one cousin who married another cousin was the first to tell her that it's disgusting she's with like a black individual. Yeah, I know. It was, it doesn't surprise me, but it still was hard to hear. Hard to hear and hard to imagine that.
I mean, it is Alabama. It doesn't get too much more deep south than Alabama. That was a great, you know, it gives us kind of just enough of these different, I'll call them characters, although they are real people, but
yeah,
it gives us sort of just enough insight into, you know, their world and kind of what draws them to the mall. And I mean, and they're also like the youngest people in the film.
Yeah, absolutely. It's also good to see youngins at the mall.
Right, but I think that was kind of why the directors sort of gravitated towards them. It's like, oh, look, here are youths, the target demographic of them all. And because almost everyone else you see in the film has to be over 40.
Yes, other than the one other worker.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the kid.
He might be the youngest. Yeah, he's like 17, I think.
Yeah, he said he was 17 and he was trying to, but I mean,
he's
he
a really
was also,
good guy.
Yeah, it was interesting to, you know, because where do young people usually go to get their first job? Well, the mall.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
applied.
Like
I didn't get any, but I applied. One of the first places I applied. By the way, if Stone Road, if you're listening, thanks for no response. I know would have helped, right? I know would have helped, but whatever.
I don't think I've ever worked in Stone Road Mall either. I have had several interviews at Stone Road Mall, but that's...
Wouldn't it be amazing to work at Cinema One? I've always thought that. It'd be really fun.
Yeah, no. Maybe not these days. I mean, I've also done the video store thing, which is another thing, which is something Did else you? That is not around anymore. But
yeah, I miss Thomas Video.
Oh yeah, no, you think you miss it?
Yeah. Well, is that the one you worked at?
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought so. I'm sorry, man.
Well, it was. Oh, geez, was it 5 years ago it closed?
Probably more. Yeah.
Four or 5 years. Anyway, it's time flies. But the characters in the film I found interesting too. And
yeah, I don't know. I don't think it was forceful. You know?
No.
Nothing
in this is forceful.
Yeah, it was real. It was very real. He I found the main character had some. He reminded me a bit of the Tiger King, but that also just might be me. Me being a bit,
it's because he owned
like southest, I guess. I don't know, but he was in this film, Jasper Mall. He's much more of a humble man. He's a genuinely nice guy.
Yeah,
I'd say he's like Alabama, but he's not like at the Tiger King level of extravagant or over the top or something. You know?
No, he's Australian, and I noticed that right away when he's like talking. He's like, that's not an Alabama accent, and yeah, I thought he was.
McClelland?
Yeah, he's Australian.
He does have Australian vibes too. He seems like he'd really like out in the desert or whatever they call it. Hunting.
I think they call it a desert.
The desert, yeah.
But yeah, we get. I do love all these like glimpses we get of Mike's past life. There's a. There's a scene where they're going through, like, somebody found, like, a folder of clips about stuff that happened in the mall, and they're going through that, and, like, the one advertisement's like, come and meet the star of As the World Turns, and that was a major event at the mall, this kind of thing, like, here's what's happening at the mall this week, and they find this little time capsule that really get kind of for young people who may not necessarily know the allure of the mall. It really kind of gives you a sense of just, you know, how big the mall was in a community more than just a place of commerce, although that's what it was. It was a cultural center to an extent as well. And, that has clearly gone away, and it's tough to put a finger on sort of what is the more responsible reason for that. Is it Amazon? Well, Amazon plays a part. Is it you know, that young people can communicate on their phones now more easily than, you know, going to a physical location and hanging out? That's probably part of it too. But I mean, at the same time, though, as you're having all these thoughts, the movie isn't terribly interested in psychoanalyzing the death of the mall. This is just the way life is.
Yeah, you're the viewer, the point of view of the mall we get, like the pretty much the historical information we get is from Mike McClellan's point of view, which I'm okay with. I prefer that to if it was the kind of documentary where they interviewed a bunch of mall owners and stuff. Those people that don't care. The individual who does own the Jasper Mall, he gave McClellan full control because he doesn't care, right?
Well, I think Mike says he owns like 30 other malls.
Yeah, and that's what I mean. They don't go to these. They just own them and then get money. They don't go to them. There's too many malls that they own to go to. And
well, it's essentially a real estate holding company.
Yeah,
you know, it's McClellan you have all, as long as everybody's paying their rent on time and you're making enough rent to cover your costs, then they don't aren't terribly invested either way. It's surprisingly. I'm not someone who gets like particularly teary-eyed about nostalgia, but it just it does make you sad in an extent. One of the reasons why the filmmakers chose Jasper Mall to chronicle for a year was because it's
it hasn't been remodeled since it opened. So it's like almost literally like this static thing that was erected in 1981 and just has never changed.
Yeah.
So it is sort of fascinating in that regard. That also in the back of your mind is that as Mike's like trying, literally throwing everything at the wall to keep the mall afloat, you know, the owners have tried nothing and they're all out of ideas. It seems that it's this place that it was designed in the 1980s. It is still colored like it's the 1980s with like peppermint walls and you know, the usual fountains and
yeah, exact same structures.
Things. Yeah.
The tables even look the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I think a lot of them were the old kind of classic chairs without legs sort of thing. It was,
yeah.
It wasn't renovated.
Yeah. It is a time capsule of a point in time and nothing. And you know, there's a great scene where Mike is trying to call like potential vendors to move into the food court because apparently Subway and this other, I guess it's an American chain because I had never heard of it, Grady's, which is also a sandwich shop. They moved out of the mall like close, I guess, within quick succession of each other. And now there's nowhere in the mall for people who work at the mall to eat. And, you know, you think about these things, you know, the whole idea of the mall was the self-contained world. And, you know, so imagine, you know, what would happen if you're, you know, couldn't go into your kitchen anymore. You know, how would you cope with that? It's just these little things you don't really think about as you're kind of watching a mall decay, as it were. But, you know, there are still people there who depend on the services of other places in the mall. It's this weird little ecosystem. Yeah. And
the hairstylist too, we got to hear some words from them and what was going on, and that was nice.
Yeah.
There's just a good amount of look at all the people that live there. And like you were saying, I loved the it didn't make it a huge part of it, but it did briefly mention how like they lost the Subway and the Grady sandwich shop. That just creates a full empty space of nothingness. Well, the Domino Boys, but other than that, right? So we got to see, you know, the mall issues, what malls deal with.
Yeah, it's very it has a very light touch, which I enjoyed a lot. It's
sad.
It's definitely sad.
No, it is. Yeah,
it's sad, but
there's some hope.
But I find the kind of resilience of some of the people there interesting. You know, Mike, who is at once like trying to hold the whole thing up on his own, but at the same time has kind of got this like c'est la vie attitude. It's like, well, you know, the guy who owns this mall owns 30 other malls, so maybe I can go work at another mall. It's, you know, the woman who owns the flower shop, Robin, she's an older woman and has more than likely earned her retirement, but at the same time she feels ambivalent. She feels like she's kind of ditching the mall at a perilous time.
She probably wanted the greater like conclusion, right? Like I think she knew she was going to eventually retire, but I don't think it was the, like I said, the finale that she wanted, right?
Yeah, like kind of go out in a high note.
But
I mean, and she was in a particular position where she's at the beginning saying that, you know, the loss of foot traffic at the mall hasn't hurt her business because she takes a lot of orders on the telephone. So to sort of see her throw in the towel is one thing. There's another guy at the beginning, the jewelry guy, who
moving downtown.
Yeah, he has like real regret because he's like, I remember coming to this mall when I was a kid and cruising the girls and hanging out. And it's just, and it's like, you know, I thought this would be a great place to be, and I thought this would be a great place I'd always be, and it just I can't stay here because, you know, I made $24 yesterday.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, it's these people who who really do believe in the place and would like to believe in the place, but are sort of knuckled under by sort of economic realities or the realities of their own, you know, agedness and desire to try retirement and things like it. It's a very complicated story, but it is also told quite simply. And I think there's so much going on here. Despite the fact it's like this 85-minute little documentary about a mall.
Yeah. No, it's real. It's real footage of the mall and the individuals, you know, and that's, means that you do as watch the documentary, like, you know, these aren't all necessarily facts, right? But it gives you the most real feeling of what you're viewing. It gives you the right kind of emotions and yeah, I don't know. And honestly, it's history, it's what we remember, right? So some of these stories, I prefer them, you know, and in the future we'll view them as the truthful ones, and that's, you know, that's cool. That'd be cool. I guess that means I'm trying to force lies to become real. But, you know, I'm just saying, I love his optimistic viewpoints about the mall and just his life in general. Like you said, he could go, he knows he'll be able to find any other job. I do, though, what I loved about that, his other job suggestions, the first two, all malls. So, you know, there's part of him, he loves the mall. There's some in his heart there. And one other thing. Mm-hmm. Even though it was great that it was, you know, more tame, kind of a quiet film, I thought the carnival part was needed because, like, all malls have that, right? It's the one day in small towns where there's a mall that all the kids are going there, right? And it was busy. It was genuinely busy. So I thought that was a cool look because I don't know about you, but I know me. I used to go to Stone Road Mall and they would have – you know, once a year they would have the carnival set up. You know the carnival company, it's got like the spinning strawberries and everything.
Yeah.
So we would get that. So I related to that. And it was nice to see a pinch of livelihood by Jasper Mall. It gave enough hope. Enough hope to add some of that feeling to the film.
Right. I mean there is still hope, but it may depend on the area and it may depend on how quick, you know, some mall managers are to, you know, trying to adapt to things. But I mean, there is, and again, you know, since the film wrapped, you know, there have been some positive developments at Jasper Mall. And
yeah. Also, we didn't mention it. We were talking about the individuals, and we only mentioned him briefly. But I like the 17-year-old at work there. He seemed to really care about the mall. He seemed to be like the boyfriend and girlfriend, where it's been a part of their life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I also enjoyed it. It was kind of weird, but his one rant about how in the morning it's like a lot of pedophiles. That was interesting. I don't know if that helps with the survival of malls that's needed, but it was fun. It was also just so out of the blue. Like, he was just talking about his morning and the kind of cleaning he has to done, and then just started talking about how there's a lot of pedophiles in the morning
that hang around. Bizarre flex. But I mean, it's real.
That's what he deals with in the mall.
Well, there's also a scene where Mike talks about how he has to like go into the old JCPenney part of the mall, which is all closed off, but he has to go in there to make sure that people aren't living in there.
Yeah, the homeless people.
So I mean, there are like some honestly sad aspects to this that
I didn't really know that was a mall issue. I wonder if that happens at Stone Road. But
well, probably not right now. But you know,
yeah, so, yeah.
Busy place, despite it all. Well, we have to wrap up this review, despite it all. So, Peter, where can people find you if they're wanting to talk malls on the internet?
Only malls. That's all I'll take. Mr. Towerak on YouTube and Twitter, and then Peter Wesley Salmon on the TikTok. Good old TikTok. Adam's favorite.
Yes, it is my favorite.
His go-to.
I spend all day on TikTok, which is why I'm so behind on things. And that's it for this week's show. We hope you liked it, and if you want to listen to it again, you can find it on our website at endcreditsradioshow.com. You can download it on the Guelph Politicast channel every Friday at Podbean,
or you can get it through your favorite podcast app at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And speaking of Spotify, you can get the playlist for most of the music that you hear on the end credits show in Spotify. All you have to do is search for end credits on CFRU in your Spotify app. We can also be found on social media on Facebook at End Credits Radio Show and on Twitter at End Credits Radio. I will be back here on CFRU Thursday at 5 p.m. for news and politics on Open Sources Guelph with Scotty Hertz. In the meantime, I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson. You can follow my news and politics site at guelphpolitico.ca, and you can read my writing about horror movies at Nightmare on Film Street at nofspodcast.com. And stay tuned for more great programming here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus, and Community Radio. We will be back next Wednesday at 3 p.m. for more end credits, and we will see you then.